This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You have from America, Carter Center is here. You have the AU, you have the SADC. So we're expecting observers from Africa to be in the front line and hope that everything will be fine.
That's Abdushakur Aboud from VOA Swahili Service in Kinshasa on the latest regarding DRC's election tomorrow. Details coming up. Also, UN agencies are expressing alarm at the growing humanitarian crisis from Sudan's fighting. And there are calls for the U.S. and Arab nations to prepare for the future once the shooting between Israel and Hamas stops. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Tomorrow, voters in the Democratic Republic of Congo go to the polls in just the fourth election since the country began transitioning to democracy 20 years ago. What's the mood in the country and what are the expectations a day before election day? Abdushakur Aboud from VOA Swahili Service is in Kinshasa monitoring the whole situation. Moments ago, I talked to him for updates on the latest.
Well, thank you very much. The situation here today, it's a very quiet mood in Kinshasa. Looks like everybody is moved out of town. There's less traffic. And when I talked with people, they said, yes, people have gone out of the town to go and prepare themselves for the elections. I think people are anticipating a lot about these elections. But according to recent polls, it shows very few people are really very interested in going to vote because they don't feel like they have the right candidates for this election. So I talked with some diplomats and they've said the same thing. They've heard that the people around these elections are not really, really happy with how everything has gone. So the mood is to wait and see what will happen tomorrow.
So we have Martin Fayulu and Moise Katumbi. Those are like the front runners together with Tshisekedi. So that is what people are not interested in. I mean, they don't represent them. What's going on here?
You know, there are different issues. There are different issues. Tshisekedi, a lot of people are saying that he promised big during his first term, but he did not deliver. He created a situation where corruption has gone rampant since the Kabila's period. So they're not happy with that. They don't see their lives changing. While the other opposition leaders, Katumbi is a rich man. They feel that there is one thing that because he has parents from outside of the country, they're questioning his loyalty. He's got Jewish and I think Italian blood. So they feel like he's a foreigner to them. Fayulu looks like he was not prepared well for these elections. So you're having that dynamic combination, which has made the people really, really not interested in the elections.
And talking about preparations, independent observers have already raised the alarm that the government's preparations are inadequate to deliver a free and fair election. And Tshisekedi's rivals have complained he is using government powers to impede their campaigns.
Yeah, that is true. That's what has been said. I've seen observers here talking about the same thing. When talking with some of the candidates, they've been complaining about that. And that, I think, is also created that atmosphere that people are not happy with. Opposition is saying that the fact that equipments were distributed late and then during the campaign, some of the campaigns were attacked. Katumbi's campaign was attacked. Martin Fayulu could not go to some areas. He was told there's no gas or there's no airplane available for him. So they have been using means and ways to stop the opposition. So that has created an atmosphere of dislike. And then one thing one should remember that here is also tribalism is playing a lot in the whole of these elections. So all of that combined has created an atmosphere that one day before, people are not sure how it's going to turn out tomorrow.
And Shakur, there have been also mounting concerns about transparency, especially after the European Union observer mission pulled out. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in areas in the volatile East are unable to vote, like you mentioned yesterday, because of the spiraling insecurity from armed groups.
Yes, that is true. People are not going to be voting in those areas. The European Union was not able, decided to get out of the observation of the elections because the government did not allow them to use their satellite equipment. And they felt that they're going to go interference with the elections. And because they wanted it to be clear and fair. And that's why they took that decision. That's a question also people are asking. You have from America, Carter Center is here. You have the AU, you have the SADC. So we're expecting observers from Africa to be in the front line and hope that everything will be fine.
Abdushakur Aboud from VOA Swahili Service. He talked to me from Kinshasa. The president of the Democratic Republic of Congo says he is confident that tomorrow's vote will be credible despite concerns over poor election preparations in the conflict-ridden country. Some 44 million people, or nearly half the population, are expected to vote for the next president. VOA's Carol Van Dam has more.
President Felix Tshisekedi says the Democratic Republic of Congo's elections on Wednesday are crucial not only for the future of the Congo, but also for the future of Africa as a whole. He made the comments in a text to the Associated Press. Since his election in 2018, Tshisekedi has introduced free primary education and health care for pregnant mothers and babies, but he's been criticized for not doing more to help ordinary Congolese. More than 60% live on less than $2.15 a day. He's also struggled to stamp out rebel violence in the East, a cause he campaigned on. Supporters are welcoming presidential candidate Moise Katumbi in eastern DRC's capital Goma this week, one of many recent campaign stops for Katumbi, who launched his presidential bid in late November. Katumbi, a millionaire businessman, told Reuters News that he will use his network of contacts to tackle Congo's problems, including insecurity, corruption, and infrastructure obstacles. He says he has experience because he was governor of Katanga for over 8 years and had a positive track record. The 58-year-old made a fortune in mining, transportation, and food processing before entering politics. When he left the governorship of the copper-rich Katanga region, he made clear that he had further political ambitions. However, he fled the country after former President Joseph Kabila accused Katumbi of hiring mercenaries in a plot against the government. He vowed to return and be part of a peaceful transition.
I'm going back to Congo. I've got a peaceful fight for our country to have the first peaceful transition. I'm going back. I'm not scared about anything. I didn't do anything wrong.
Katumbi was sentenced in absentia to 3 years in prison for allegedly selling a building he did not own, and in 2018 was prevented from entering the country to run for president. He returned a year later after President Tshisekedi pardoned him. Earlier, Katumbi was allied with Tshisekedi's Sacred Union political alliance, but by the end of 2022 became a challenger to the president. He's seen as one of the opposition frontrunners, along with 67-year-old Martin Fayulu, a former oil executive and leader of the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party. Some election observers have said that Fayulu was the real winner of the 2018 election. In an interview with VOA's French to Africa service on Monday, Fayulu says he's back to fight for a job he says is rightfully his.
Congolese, they agree with me that we have to take the power so we can build a free, strong, prosperous, and dignified Congo. I've toured the country, and the people still remember that I won the 2018 election, and they really want to do the same this time around.
But it's not clear if Fayulu wields the same support he had in 2018 when he was the umbrella opposition contender. This time, the opposition could not reach a deal over a united candidate. Another aspirant is Nobel Peace Prize winner Dr. Denis Mukwege, who won the prize for his work on sexual violence in warfare. In an exclusive interview in October with VOA's French to Africa, Mukwege said he is running, although he thinks the election process is flawed. He said he went ahead with his campaign because because laws and human rights are not respected and because the country's vast mineral resources are not used to benefit the population. Some doubt remains about the ability of the Congolese Electoral Commission to organize the ballot on time. The DRC is roughly the size of continental Western Europe and has very few roads. Last week, the government asked the United Nations peacekeeping mission in the country to help transport voting materials after having long publicly criticized the force. The UN agreed on Friday to do so. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
As we reported, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, voters go to the polls tomorrow to elect a president. They will also elect members of parliament and municipal councillors. In the east of the country, people hope the next president will restore peace. Civil servants, such as teachers, also are hoping the new president will change the way they are treated and improve their pay. Zanim Neti Zaidi has more from Goma.
Samba Kasero is a 26-year-old mother of one. She was born in the territory of Masisi, one of the most unstable areas in the province of North Kivu, which has seen repeated conflicts. It recently was the scene of clashes between the M23 rebels and the loyalist army, prompting her to take refuge in the Kanyaruchinya camp near Goma, the largest city in the east. Here, she sails to earn money. What she expects from the new president is peace. She says she expects the president to be powerful so he can give peace to the DRC. That's what she needs, because in the camp she's suffering terribly. If peace returned, she could go back to her village and continue her sewing. Teachers expect the new president to take good care of them. Paul Munayo, a teacher for over 20 years, works in a public school. He says he's unable to provide for his family. He hopes for an improvement from the next president. He says he hopes that if the president takes good care of the teachers, life will be better because he could take care of his family, clothe and feed them. He could also buy land where he could build or even find a place to rent so his family could live comfortably. The Eastern DRC has suffered nearly three decades of rebel violence involving dozens of different groups. In the past few years, the violence has increased and economic activities have stalled. Traders who used to buy supplies in the villages of North Kivu province and sell in the towns are no longer working because of the security situation. Hamuli Shombo, a trader in Goma, thinks the new president should first deal with the security situation so he can return to work. He says that where there is no war, there is bound to be peace. So everything is easy to find, like food. Now, the agricultural produce he used to bring in from the surrounding regions can no longer reach Goma because the roads are closed. But if there is peace, food products can circulate easily. President Felix Tshisekedi is running for a second term as head of his ruling coalition, the Sacred Union. He first took office in 2018. Opposition groups have complained of violence and sabotage aimed at their campaigns, with some supporters attacked and their campaign materials destroyed. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Neti Zaidi in Goma.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. United Nations agencies are expressing alarm at the deepening humanitarian and forced displacement crisis in Sudan after the paramilitary response support forces seized the major city of Ouad Madani. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Officials at the United Nations call this latest development a devastating blow to efforts to provide life-saving assistance to millions of Sudanese whose lives have been upended by civil war. Wad Madani, Sudan's second largest city, was a refuge for nearly 500,000 people who fled areas of intense fighting between the paramilitary group Rapid Support Forces and Sudan's armed forces. The city in Al Jazeera state also operated as a key humanitarian hub. Jens Laerke, spokesman for the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, says all humanitarian activities there have stopped. He says organizations have been forced to temporarily suspend operations because of the fighting and relocate to neighboring states.
All humanitarian field missions within and from Al Jazeera state have been suspended until further notice. If the fighting continues, aid distribution for some 2 million people, about a third of the population in the state, will be compromised. And we need the fighting to stop so we can restart our programs for people in acute need.
The UN reports more than 12,000 people have been killed and more than 7 million have been uprooted from their homes since the war began 8 months ago. The UN Refugee Agency reports many people have moved repeatedly to find safety. Between 250,000 and 300,000 people reportedly have fled Wad Madani and surrounding areas since the clashes began. The spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency, William Spindler, says some people who had sought refuge in Wad Madani have been forced to flee to another area for safety for the second time in only a few months.
We are very worried that if the thing further escalates and spreads to Wad Madani state, it could significantly impact the work of UNHCR and other humanitarian organizations that provide critical assistance to over 437,000 South Sudanese refugees and some 433,000 internally displaced Sudanese there.
UN agencies report nearly 25 million people in Sudan require humanitarian assistance, but it only has been possible to reach 5 million with some form of aid this year. And this, they say, is getting harder to do because of a lack of support from the international community. They warn the potential for this war to destabilize the entire region continues to grow as the scale of the crisis grows. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Washington Post says President Joe Biden has started pushing Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to accept a day-after plan that would put the Palestinian territories on a path to eventual statehood. The newspaper's editorial said the United States and Arab nations should prepare now for the day after the shooting stops, laying the groundwork to restart the process of creating two states, Israel and Palestine, that are not locked in perpetual conflict. Ayman Zen Eldin, former director of media at the Egyptian Foreign Ministry and former Egyptian ambassador to Spain, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can...
We have a few little technical difficulties. We'll be right back. But until then, Uganda's military says militants with ties to the Islamic State group killed at least 10 people during an attack in the country's western region. A military spokesperson says the Allied Democratic Forces militants who attacked Kamwenge district on Tuesday had crossed from the neighboring DR Congo in November and were being hunted by the military. It's the latest in a series of attacks this year blamed on the ADF, a group established in the early 1990s by Ugandan Muslims who said they were being marginalized in the East African nation. And now we go back to senior analyst Mohammed Shenawi's report. Ayman Zen Aldin, former director of media at the Egyptian Foreign Ministry and former Egyptian ambassador to Spain, discussed developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
I think everybody now agrees that a lot of work needs to be done, and the conflict has to be brought to a settlement as soon as this is possible. The point is that after what happened over the last two or so months and what we have all witnessed and recognized as the positions by the Israeli government that expressly said that it is not interested in the peace process that was conceived in Oslo some 30 years ago. So we are faced with the reality that there is a lot of work that needs to be done, a peace process. I think the underlying factors for a settlement are not there yet. We have a problem with the Israeli political positions, and that represents, so far at least, the majority of the Israeli population that is not interested in a settlement, but more interested in annexing the territories of the West Bank and possibly the Gaza Strip. And we have also a situation in the Palestinian territories with the destruction that has been taking place in Gaza and a similar destruction that was taking place in the West Bank. And that has to be revisited and a better environment created for a settlement. Otherwise, we'll be engaging in an exercise of self-deception, maybe a lip service. I think the United States on its part needs to work on Israel to make sure that Israel is brought back to the mentality of a settlement, but also all of us, Egypt included, but also the Arab nations, need to work with the Palestinian side to rebuild the Palestinian community, society, polity, economy, so that it's in a better position to engage in a final settlement. So yes, final settlement work has to start at the earliest possible time. But for that to happen, a lot of groundwork needs to be done.
The United States will need Arab nations' help, both in rebuilding Gaza and in giving legitimacy to a refreshed Palestinian Authority. What role do you envision for Egypt on that?
Of course, Egypt has always been engaged actively in support for Gaza particularly, but Palestine in general, Gaza because of proximity and the historical connection between Egypt and Gaza. And I think that that is taking place now with the help that is being provided to Gaza, where Egypt is among the most prominent providers of relief to Gaza now. And I think that will continue to be the case after the war ends. But I think now, with the rebuilding of Gaza, I think the West and Israel should bear the main responsibility. The destruction that is happening now in Gaza is undertaken by Israel with the full support of many Western countries, particularly the United States, but others as well, that gave Israel clear cover that it has the free hand to undertake whatever military action it deems necessary with all the civilian damage. So I think the Western countries should bear the main responsibility. I think also Israel should be held responsible. There has to be some discussion of reparations so that the rebuilding of Gaza is essentially carried out at the expense of those who bear the main responsibility. But of course, the Arab countries will have to chip in, and I'm sure they will be chipping in. But I say Israel in particular needs to learn that its actions, its choices come with a cost. Otherwise, we will be rebuilding Gaza for it only to be destroyed again and again, like it has been being destroyed again and again in the past. As to the legitimacy of the refreshed Palestinian Authority, I think that is an important quest. I think this legitimacy has to be based on two pillars. The first pillar would be the space that would be given to the Palestinian Authority to act on behalf of the Palestinian people. Because one of the reasons why the Palestinian Authority currently is facing so much trouble with the Palestinian population, with its ability to lead, is because this space has been restricted and its role has been defined by carrying out the tasks Israel wants. That's what Israel has been asking of the Palestinian Authority. That's what the United States has been asking the Palestinian Authority, to ensure the security of Israel and to restrain those elements that are in opposition to Israel, to work on the education system and so on and so forth. This is why the Palestinian Authority has been lacking in legitimacy. The other pillar is to what extent it represents the aspirations of the Palestinian people, to what extent it emerged from as a legitimate Palestinian process. And I think elections that are open, free, and fair to elect the representatives of the Palestinian people should be critical in ensuring the legitimacy of the Palestinian entity that will be taking care of the Palestinian people. Otherwise, we will be repeating the same mistakes.
The That was Ayman Zain Aydin, former Egyptian ambassador to Spain, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shanawi. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokwilia Baro, and our engineer, Pete Huntley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.